Good morning. This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. One out of five adults in the U.S. lives with mental illness, and research shows that 40 to 50% of people with severe disorders like schizophrenia and bipolar disorder are not receiving any treatment. On average, people with serious mental illness die younger than others. Some research points to two decades of lost lifespan. A few weeks ago on the show, we looked at the potential impact which cuts in the O'Malley and Hogan budgets would have on reimbursements and salaries of behavioral health providers in Maryland. Today, we're digging into what access to mental health treatment looks like for consumers with insurance. With us in the studio is Adrienne Ellis, director of the Parity Project of the Mental Health Association of Maryland. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Sheila. Thank you for having me.
Explain, Adrienne, the law that Congress passed in 2008, the Mental Health Parity and Addiction Equity Act. What is that intended to achieve?
So that law that was passed in 2008 was an attempt by the federal government to remove longstanding historical discrimination by the insurance companies against individuals with mental illness and substance use disorder. Essentially, it's a pretty complicated law, and it's based upon comparability between medical surgical care and mental health and substance use disorder care. The crux of the law says that insurance companies can't be more restrictive in how they manage the mental health and substance use disorder benefits than how they manage the medical and surgical benefits. For example, if an insurance company is requiring prior authorization for outpatient mental health visits, then they have to require and similarly apply those prior authorization requirements to outpatient medical benefits. The law applies to all things like financial requirements, co-payments, deductibles, co-insurance requirements, limits on the number of visits that individuals can make and the number of days someone can stay inpatient, as well as to what the law considers or calls non-quantitative treatment limitations. And those are really kind of the more nuanced plan designs that insurance companies use to limit how an individual accesses a certain benefit.
Non-quantitative. Give me an example.
So it's the treatment limitations that can't be really measured. There's no mathematical equivalence. So it's a limitation such as a prior authorization requirement, any kind of utilization review. So prior authorization or concurrent authorization, the way that plans determine how they're going to put their prescription drugs on the formulary, how they tier those drugs, those are considered a non-quantitative treatment limitation. How a plan manages its network of providers, how a plan determines the credentialing standards for the providers, how it determines the reimbursement rates for the providers, all of those are considered non-quantitative treatment limitations.
And so essentially, the attempt is any kinds of restrictions that apply to mental health treatment can only be applied if those same things are applied to somatic health or physical health treatment.
Right. Both mental health treatment and substance use disorder treatment. The law says they have to be comparable and no more restrictive.
So you've been lobbying in Annapolis to get a state law passed, a bill passed that would make the Parity Act more easily enforceable in this state. What do you find inadequate about the federal law?
So the federal law, like I said, it's a pretty complicated law, and it's based upon comparability, and it's based upon, these embedded treatment limitations that are in the insurance documents. And the federal government is relying on the states. They've said that they're looking to the states to enforce this landmark federal law. And many states, and Maryland is one of them, has resorted to a complaint-driven process to enforce the law, meaning that
Complaint-driven.
Right. Meaning that consumers would have to actually be the ones to determine whether or not a violation of this law has occurred and then file a complaint with an insurance regulator, either at the state level, here in Maryland would be the Maryland Insurance Administration, or at the federal level at the Department of Labor. There's a lot of problems with that complaint-driven process. And so our law that we're trying to pass here in Maryland would put the onus back on the insurance companies to demonstrate that they comply with the law and take that burden off of the consumers to really find those violations and file those complaints. They would have to have access to the information that we are trying to require the insurance companies to demonstrate and report in the law that we're trying to pass this session. currently they don't have that information. It's not part of their insurance documents. There's nothing in there about how reimbursement rates are determined or how the networks are set up. There's even very little in there about authorization requirements. It may say something like there's no prior authorization for outpatient care, but inpatient care may need pre-authorization. But that doesn't actually explain how that's applied, nor does it explain how it's applied on the medical surgical side. And remember, the parity law is all about comparability and no more restrictive for mental health and substance use disorder. So it's very difficult for a consumer to actually file a very specific parity violation complaint.
I want us to hear from a listener who called to share his story. He told producer John McCone that he's disappointed with the mental health care system, and he said it's been free services like his family and Alcoholics Anonymous that have been most helpful to him.
Well, my name's Evan. I'm 32. I'm a single parent of a three-year-old boy, and I live in Catonsville, Maryland. Since elementary school, I've tried to reach out and contact different people for help with anxiety and depression, just overall inability to relate to people, I guess, or certain work circumstances or school or whatever. I've tried dozens of times different avenues, everything from, you know, going to the emergency room a couple times to, you know, calling hotlines to seeking just like a, you know, a regular visit therapist. And, you know, I've had roadblocks the whole way, and one of the biggest ones being that when you really want help, when you find yourself in a desperate point that you're really looking to reach out, you can contact people, but it doesn't mean that you get any help.
I want to ask you about roadblocks, Adrian. Let me just say first, this is Maryland Morning on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, and with me is Adrian Ellis, director of the Parity Project of the Mental Health Association of Maryland. Adrian, you recently examined access and accuracy of psychiatric networks of the health insurance plans sold on the Maryland Health Connection, the computerized exchange. You looked at the time frame from June to November of last year. What were your key findings?
So we spent from June to November studying the 2014 qualified health plans. The networks were publicly available on the Maryland Health Connection, so we took advantage of being able to access all the networks. And what we found is that, unfortunately, Evan's situation is not unique. And so we contacted 1,153 psychiatrists who were listed as taking health insurance sold on the Maryland Health Connection, and we found that less than 50% of them were even reachable by phone, meaning they either had bad numbers, they were no longer participating with the insurance network, or they weren't at the number where that they were listed to be at. When we dug in even further, of those ones that we were able to reach, 20% said that they weren't psychiatrists. They were either social workers or counselors or some other type of mental health provider or maybe another type of medical practitioner. And then the most surprising and disappointing finding was that only 14% of those 1,153 psychiatrists, so only 126 of them across the state, supposedly taking the health insurance, were available for an appointment within the next 6 weeks, which is really just way too long for someone like Evan or anyone else who's really trying to access care.
Right. Evan said when you're in his situation, 45 days can seem like forever.
When you do reach out, like if you had an emergency, if you had an open wound and you were bleeding, you'd go and be seen at a bunch of different facilities immediately, because you can show, you know, there's a tangible problem. In my past experience, it takes more emotional effort to drag yourself to the point where you're going to actually ask for help. Not being able to be seen right away is such a slap in the face. You usually get put into a database of some sort, and then you get scheduled for an appointment. And by the time you actually get that appointment, the urgency is completely gone. I just want to be left alone. I want to get back to my life. I want to not worry about this stuff that is this constant stress on me. And it just is such a, you know, it's such a demotivating factor that you can't talk to someone right away and get any kind of just help, you know, or communication, I guess.
Adrian, why did you focus on psychiatrists in your study?
We focused on psychiatrists in our study because my office at the Parity Project, we take calls from consumers who are having difficulty, like Evan, getting access to care through their private health insurance. And over the past year, the number of calls related to an individual trying to get access to themselves for themselves or a family member with a psychiatrist dramatically increased. And so we started trying to speak to regulators and some of the insurance companies to try to figure out what the problem was. And the common reply to us was, well, show us the data, show us that there's a problem. So we took advantage of the fact that these networks were publicly available and designed a study to really ascertain whether or not there was a real issue or whether what we were hearing anecdotally could actually be proven with the data.
But somebody might say, well, but there are other mental health specialists, perhaps not so qualified as a psychiatrist, but still can help. And so maybe you've made the problem seem worse than it is.
So we would absolutely agree that there are other types of mental health providers. Clinical social workers and counselors can absolutely provide mental health treatment. What they cannot do, what is outside the scope of their license, is prescribe mental health medications. So psychiatrists are really one of the only mental health providers that can both prescribe and manage mental health medications, as well as provide psychotherapy. And some individuals really prefer to see one provider, both for their medication and for their therapy, and not necessarily want to have to see two providers.
There's a movement of some psychiatrists to not taking insurance at all. Why is that?
So I don't want to speak for all psychiatrists, but anecdotally, we've heard from the psychiatrists that there's a couple of reasons why they are opting out of the insurance networks. And the number one reason we hear is the reimbursement rates are just too low for them to maintain their business. The rates are, instead of increasing with inflation, they're actually decreasing. And
this is true of psychiatrists paid by private insurance as well as by Medicare and Medicaid?
The rates for private insurance are much, in Maryland, are much lower than the rates that Medicaid pays. So, which is kind of an anomaly. You would have very few other specialists who would say that they prefer to take Medicaid over the private insurance market. So, as I said, one reason that they don't participate is because of the lowering of reimbursement rates. And then compounding that is the burdensome paperwork process that they have in order to get credentialed on panels, as well as the authorization requirements that insurance companies require them to go through when they're trying to get care authorized for their patients.
Adrian, thank you.
Thank you.
Adrian Ellis directs the Parity Project of the Mental Health Association of Maryland. We have a link to her study and more information at our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. More of this interview there, too. I'm Sheila Cast. Ahead on Maryland Morning, is curating taking over? Stay with us on 88.1.